Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
63.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You gotta understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
The Fan. First things first, recipe,
sucker fan. All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brett Ciencia is going to join us here in just a second. Runs the Pick 6 Preview Digital Magazine on Twitter. Heisman voter as well. One of the most accurate Power 5 previews you're going to get out there. We got a sneak peek at it, and it's incredibly detailed, really good. So we're excited to talk college football with Brett. Brett, thanks for joining us here in Portland, man, on the home of the Ducks. I will start with your big prediction. You gave your playoff picks out there, and you have Oregon in your top four. What led you to believe they're going to take that jump and be a playoff team with a new starting quarterback this year?
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's exciting to finally be talking college football again. And yeah, so Oregon's kind of a bold pick. I don't think you'll find any other preseason publications with that pick. The natural instinct right away is to, you know, it's worth noting, I published this about a month ago. So at the time, I had been evaluating the Ohio State matchup and such. But even throw that game out, what led me to this pick was the defense. It's defense first. I mean, that's what really caught my eye. It was a top five unit last year. They held, I think it was five opponents in a row to single digits. Just stuff like that. And when you look at it deeper, they bring 10 of those starters back on defense. And that one vacancy is at linebacker, and not just one, but two five-star kids are coming in to compete and add the, you know, add high caliber quality there. So the defense I know is going to be locked down like it was last year and even take a step forward. Offensively, you know, I think the national narrative, it might be, you know, some lazy fans on the East Coast, but they always think of the Chip Kelly gadget offense, the speed and not being able to line up in the trenches, but that's completely the opposite of what Mario Cristobal has built here. He's built it from the trenches out. You know, very strong line play on both sides of the ball, but especially his acumen, his offensive line. And yes, they lose four starters. That was an incredible, you know, school record unit there. The four guys coming up the ranks, though, have higher recruiting backgrounds, higher recruiting ratings, and not to mention that one starter back is Penny Sewell, the best lineman in the nation, the Outland winner. So all things considered, I think that this is The one last note would be that they finally, a team has passed USC in the five-year recruiting average, first time since the 90s, and it's Oregon. And you start to see that high-end talent pop off the, you know, off the film, especially in that, you know, Utah game, the Rose Bowl. You're starting to see it come together, and I'm pretty confident with Oregon.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt, at least in my mind, that Oregon has, if you take one position out, the most talented roster in the conference, because you mentioned all the talent they have back on defense. I think they're better at the skill position skill positions this year than they were last year. Running backs are back, right? So they have a great roster, but the huge question mark for them is their quarterback and who's going to win the job, and then how will that position perform? What level of play do they need out of that position, and then how big of a concern is that for you picking them to go to the playoff with such a major question mark of not knowing who their starter is going to be and how they're going to play?
Yeah, it's definitely a question mark. But when you look back at some of the other playoff teams in recent history, they were first-time quarterbacks. I was on the right side of it last year picking Ohio State over Michigan. Most of the magazines had Michigan. I went with Ohio State with the unknown at quarterback. Now, granted, Justin Fields was a perfect five-star transfer coming in, but still a new starter. But in this case, what really gives me some confidence is the offensive coordinator hiring, which I'm calling the best coordinator hire of this entire cycle with Joe Moorhead coming in. I know he struggled a bit in the SEC as a head coach, but some guys are built as just genius coordinators, and he's one of them. And you saw what he did at Penn State, turning around that program after they were coming off their sanctions. And he found a new first-time quarterback with Trace McSorley, and we saw how that turned out. So there's enough talent. There's enough firepower here at quarterback. Tyler Shuck turned some heads last year in fall camp during the season, too. He's playing behind Herbert. And you bring in an experienced Power 5 starter from Boston College, Anthony Brown. Now, he's average, maybe above average, that kind of caliber, but at least that's the floor. That's what I know we have the floor is at least a solid Anthony Brown. So, all things considered, I think the quarterback position will be fine. And also, I think you'll notice differently this year on offense is that Moorhead loves to get his quarterbacks involved. I think that was something that Oregon fans have been, clamoring for last year. Let Herbert run, let him loose. And you saw it in the Rose Bowl. It worked. 3 touchdowns on the ground for him. So Moorhead wants to get 10 to 15 carries for his QB a game, and I think it'll unlock a new element to the offense.
Yeah, this is Brett Ciencia of Pick 6 Previews. You can find all the information on his Twitter account, at Pick 6 Previews. Give him a follow there. He is one of the best prognosticators in college football, joining us here and talking all things college football. I loved your game grader with coaches in college football. For our audience, could you explain that very quickly? And then what are your thoughts on Mario Cristobal and just what he has been in a head coach? I know it's been a short sample size here in Oregon, but what you have made of Mario Cristobal as a head coach?
Yeah, for sure. So game grader is my analytical formula. It looks at scoring differential, yardage differential, per play metrics, long yardage plays, a bunch of stuff. And I know it sounds like a word salad, but basically it gets me a number to evaluate these teams based off their opponents and how well they're playing in the games, because not every 7-5 season is created equal. There's a lot of variables that I factor in and gets me a number. So, and what I did with the coaching carousel, which you alluded to, is, in late December when all these hirings happen, you see people rush to Twitter and give grades out like, oh, UCLA, it was an A-plus hire with Chip Kelly, and everyone laughed at Herm Edwards. Look how that turned out. So what I like to do is I like to wait 2, 3, 4 years, go back, apply my formula, my game grader, and see how these programs really did. Yeah, Mario Cristobal is right there towards the top, number 3 in that 2018 class of coaches. I factor in the 4 years prior to get some context to what the coach is taking over, and then factor in his 2 or 3 seasons. So, yeah, he's trending the right way, very impressive. I mentioned it already, but what really popped out was the physicality that Oregon showed on the big stage against Utah, against a top defensive line, and then conversely against the best offensive line with Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. They held them 100 yards on their rushing total. So this is a new Oregon. It's a physical, tough Oregon. It's 5-star talent like we've never seen in Oregon before. So, I'm excited about the trajectory of this program, 2020 and beyond.
You mentioned you come out with the playoff prediction. You kind of filled this out before some of this new information has come out about scheduling changes and all that stuff. You have both Ohio State and Oregon in the playoff this year. I'm just curious now. It looks like every conference is going to go this way. I guess we don't know for sure, but the Big Ten saying conference only games, so Oregon and Ohio State off the board. I'd be surprised if the ACC and the Pac-12 didn't follow suit and say, let's just play our conference opponents. Does that change your outcome of the season? Now, who knows if the playoff, when it's going to happen, all that's all going to look, but if we're playing only conference schedules, does your playoff predictions change at all?
I don't think for Oregon it does. I think that I think Oregon's going to run the table in the Pac-12. I kind of had that baked into my prediction because, I was kind of leading Ohio State had that matchup taken place, and I was thinking, all right, even if Ohio State beats Oregon and they show well, maybe within 10, 14 points, if Oregon's strong enough to run the conference, then they'd make it in 12-1. Mm-hmm. So in this case now, when it's only conference, I think they still can run the table in the Pac-12. And some of those above average programs are going through some transition. I think it's they're distancing themselves. So I think that my prediction stays the same with Clemson, Ohio State, and Oregon. Now, my worry with the SEC pick, historically you're guaranteed the SEC winners in there. If they go 12-1, they're in, no question about it. I had Florida actually this year. Now, though, if they are beating each other up and a team emerges 8-1, but the other leagues have undefeated champions, you're not going to leave out an undefeated Power 5 champ. So it could be a very strange scenario where you have undefeated Clemson, Ohio State, Oregon, and say Oklahoma or a Big 12 winner, and then one loss, Bama or Florida, gets left out. So it's going to be crazy. You'll never deny an undefeated Power 5 team, which is never going to happen. So we'll see. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, this is Brett Ciencia, pick6previews.com. Head there. Give him a follow on Twitter at pick6previews. What do you make of Oregon State? I was looking at your Power 5 conference or team rankings for 2020. You've got OSU at 57. I can't really disagree with it all that much, given all the other teams in front of them. What do you think their season is this year with Jonathan Smith? They really came on last year, got to 5, pushed for 6. What do you think they do this year? Do you think similar record? Do they take that next step up? What say you?
Yeah, I was actually very impressed with Jonathan Smith last year. You know, they're creeping around bowl eligibility, which is something rare in recent history for Oregon State. It was a tough rebuild. I think he's doing all the right things. I think that there's good times ahead. It might not be this fall, though. I think the offense goes through a lot of change. Jake Luton, I was really impressed with his accuracy, his ball, ball control. Oregon State, they didn't lose the turnover battle at all in all 12 of their games. So whether you call that luck or skill, either way, with Luton gone and his ball control, that might go down a bit. So some of those close games might go the other way. Strong defense, though. I like what they're building on defense. But I don't think the pieces are in place yet for the big jump. But if you're an Oregon State fan, you gotta love the hire. You gotta love what they're building there. It just seems like more positivity around the program, the players, the fans. So a good thing being built there.
How do you see the kind of power rankings shake out in the Pac-12? I know you obviously got Oregon running the table and winning the conference, but Washington, a team somewhat to Oregon with a good defense, but question marks at the quarterback position, breaking in a new head coach. USC, we know they got a lot of talent. Utah's been good as of late. Cal, maybe a sleeper. Just how do you see the power rankings, the top, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 teams shaking out in the conference?
Yeah, I had Oregon 1. Washington, I put this in the book, too. I think Washington's an offensive coordinator away from competing for playoff spots, because really that offense has been terrible the last couple of years. The player personnel is fine. It's just you got to have a scheme to execute. So they're close. Nasty defense, like you talked about. USC, I have 3 overall in the Pac-12. I love their offense. I had a chance to speak with Graham Harrell this preseason, their offensive coordinator. He worked his magic last year coming in overnight and turning that around. So they're going to score a lot. Got to fix the defense up. I'd probably go Utah and Arizona State next. They're pretty similar teams to me, right outside the top 25. Just strong programs being built there, especially at Arizona State with Herm Edwards. Behind that, I do have a slight drop off to Cal. I'm a little bit more pessimistic than others on Cal this year. Chase Garber, solid quarterback. They return a lot of players, but they're switching offenses now. I don't know. I'm not totally sold on what they've built there. So those would be the top 6. And, look for some sleepers like Stanford to maybe finally bounce back. I mean, they were very injured, very young last year. It was unlike the normal Stanford David Shaw team. So I think that they get healthy and stronger and could scare some of these teams at the top.
Brett, I hate to ask you this on air. I probably should have talked about this off the air in an email with you. Are you able to stick around for one more segment? We're kind of against the clock, but I love talking college football with you.
Oh, yeah. I'll keep talking for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got about
I'm in.
Good. We got a 2-minute break. We're going to kick it back with Brett Ciencia of Pick 6 Previews, pick6previews.com. We'll talk some more Pac-12 and college football, because I want to talk about Nick Rolovich at WSU, Clay Helton at USC, and just your thoughts in general about some of these other big programs in college football. More college football talk with Brett Ciencia of Pick 6 Previews next, Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. Even quicker than I thought, we're going to get into the Pac-12 revenue story that came out just for the show coming up at 1:30, but Brett Ciencia, one of the big prognosticators of college football, pick6previews.com. He's got the digital magazine coming out. It is really good. It's loaded with tons of information from so many programs and diving into the Pac-12. All right, so we've talked Oregon State, Oregon, you have them in the playoff, a little UW. I want to pick your brain on Washington State, because you give them some respect of what they've done developing talent. One of the top offenses with Mike Leach. They hire a coach from Hawaii, Nick Rolovich. We were able to talk to him. He seems like such a good guy. I love his offensive mind. What are we to expect going from a Mike Leach, pretty consistent 9-11 win type seasons at Washington State, now with a relative unknown to Power 5 fans, Nick Rolovich?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting transition. I cover in the book all 66 Power 5 teams, Notre Dame, BYU, and what I really like each year is the coaching change programs, because you get to see what worked, what didn't, what direction the AD wanted to go with the next hire, scheme changes, that kind of thing. And this one's pretty fascinating because, you talk about two kind of outlier programs, Washington State and Pullman, very, far from airports and from cities. It's a different kind of unique thing out there. And then same thing with Hawaii. I mean, obviously they're in the islands. They're long flights away, hard to recruit to. So, you know, what a better fit. He has success with a geographical disadvantage out in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And also in the book I included, I always put each team's stat profiles, offense, defense, and everything. But in this case, I actually included Hawaii's next to Washington State to show you how closely these offenses kind of resemble each other. Now, no one is as, you know, pass heavy and perfect with his scheme like Mike Leach, but on the spectrum of offenses, if you will, this one's pretty close with Nick Rolovich, his run and shoot. So it'll be similar. It's not going to be, you know, an exact clone of the old Leach offense, but I think if you were to make a change out of an air read, I mean, this one's pretty similar. So yeah, I think it was a great hire. We'll see how it transitions from the non-AQ level at Hawaii up to the Pac-12. But I think at a school like Washington State, given the resources and the geography, like I mentioned, you got to think outside the box. So this is right there in the same realm.
One really interesting team I think this year in the conference is going to be Stanford, just because, I mean, David Shaw is such a respected coach, and we know how good he's been for such a long time. And then things really took a weird turn last year where they had a down season, no bowl game, and then they just had, it felt like a mass exodus this offseason with a lot of guys transferring. Where are you at with Stanford in the upcoming season? What are they bringing back? And is that a blip on the radar season, or is Stanford kind of back to being the Stanford of old?
I think it's a combination of both, actually. I think that, you know, the old power run game, the old Stanford that would just maul you for four quarters, I think that's gone away. You saw it in the middle of 2018 when Shaw actually had to play to his strengths, and he actually went pass heavy a little bit with KJ Costello and his receivers. Yeah, so I think last year, it's both things. First, they were very injured. They were very young. I remember they were playing, I think, Washington. They had all these freshmen on the line, and they actually still grinded out an upset there. But so the offensive line gets Walker Little back, Foster Sorrell, Bronson Braggs. All these guys are now back and healthy. Those young guys are now more experienced. So I think you'll see a pretty solid team kind of being slept on nationally. But in the grand scheme of things, program-wide, I think that the program has kind of taken a step back than what it was in those, you know, 2010s. So, and I think the biggest development you've seen is the collapse of the defense. I mean, what used to be a very stout front seven is pretty soft on the defensive line. And then, yeah, you saw these transfers. These weren't just backups. These were starters. These were guys that were going to contribute transferring out of the program. So, yeah, a couple question marks there going forward as a program.
Well, Brett, you mentioned not being quite what they once were. USC's one of those programs that they've kind of been stuck in this place really since Pete Carroll left. They've had a couple seasons. They won the Rose Bowl, obviously, a few years ago. I don't know if people really say, okay, that's traditional USC. That felt like a kind of a random weird run. And then you had the 1 year Lane Kiffin was number one in the country. Largely not what they were with Pete Carroll. What do you make of the talent they have? Slovis as quarterback. They've got some good offensive line players, some good wide receiver options for them. What do you make of Graham Harrell, Clay Helton this year with USC? It seems like the pressure's starting to kick back up, not only for Clay Helton's job status, but in the sense of they have the talent to go win this conference. Do you buy that?
Yeah, they're certainly right there. I mean, so my thing with Clay Helton is, you know, one of the roles of a head coach is your coordinator hires. And what he pulled in with Graham Harrell last year, that was an A-plus coordinator hire. They came in to tailback you, as it was once known, and made him fully air raid. And they were putting up thousands of yards of passing and, you know, scoring points left and right. And all that talent's back. It's Keaton Slovis. That was a true freshman last year. Now he's experienced. The trio of receivers is in my top five receiver unit rankings. Strong offensive line and five stars everywhere. So the offense, yeah, he aced that. So as a head coach, can he do the same on defense? He pulled in Todd Orlando, mixed results down at Texas, but he's going to need to shore up that defense. Mm-hmm. And then the other element of a head coach is recruiting. And obviously USC is a recruiting power. When you put a head coach on the hot seat for 18 months, you start to see some impact in recruiting. And it was their worst class ever. I think it scared a lot of kids away thinking, you know, who am I actually going to be playing for in 2 years, 3 years, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, take the hot seat off this guy. Let his coordinators start to work and see. I mean, he already won a Rose Bowl with this program, and we'll see. I think that they're a top three Pac-12 team this year, and chance to move up.
Yeah, we've kind of highlighted almost every relevant team in the conference. Just curious, kind of a random question, though, to revisit all of it. Which program of the Pac-12 this year are you expecting the biggest disappointment out of based on expectations for general fans going in? And then which program are you maybe expecting to have the surprise kind of season? Like we talked about Oregon State almost getting to a bowl game last year. Nobody saw that coming. Who's the biggest disappointment and who's the biggest surprise in your mind in the conference this year?
I think to the casual fan, they see that UCLA is in their third year with Chip Kelly and they have a returning quarterback, and maybe their analysis will stop there. But I think that UCLA is going to take another major step back. This program, I mean, you're talking about a program that used to recruit in the top 20s, top 15s, top 10s. It's just in shambles right now. You turn on any of these games, it's half empty Rose Bowl stadiums. I also, run a stat where I look at the geography of recruiting where, say 10 years ago, it was something like 80% of the California blue chips would stay at UCLA and USC. It's down to 5% last cycle. And a lot of that's because UCLA has fallen off. Yeah.
Wow.
So I look at UCLA as a program that's taking another step back this year. They didn't really fix the defense. They retained Azanara, who struggled as the coordinator. In terms of a program that could sneak up and surprise, Oregon making the playoff would certainly be a surprise. I have that. But I guess relatively, maybe an Arizona State could break through into the top 25 now. The only thing I'm worried about with that is in a short offseason with no spring ball and in a very limited summer, they switched both coordinators. So that's going to be tough to install that. They're going from a big spread offense to more of a traditional, smash mouth offense. They brought in Boise State's coordinator. So picture what Boise State's run the last 10 years, and they're trying to bring that there. So if they can get the schemes installed quickly, then that's a team that has a lot of returning starters and, star power on defense, plus Jaden Daniels, very clutch as a freshman last year, quarterback. So that's a team that can maybe sneak up.
Brett Ciencia, pick6previews.com, pick6previews on Twitter. He's got the digital magazine coming out. He breaks down all the conferences, all the teams, gives you rankings of all these players in college football, does an exceptional job. It's a very detailed magazine. So thanks so much for sending us a copy. Who is your Joe Burrow potentially this year? And what I mean by that is we all know who Joe Burrow was last year, but almost nobody thought he had any chance of being a Heisman winner and probably having, statistically speaking, the best season from a college quarterback in the history of the game. Who do you think is the Joe Burrow potentially of college football this year?
I'd say Kyle Trask from Florida. He kind of fits a similar mold where they were both thrown into action as first-time starters. And then in that second year, you see Joe Burrow. He made that major jump last year with Trask. It was actually his first year starting ever. He never actually started in high school. Made it to Florida and was thrown in mid-season after Felipe Franks was injured. And all he did was take that opportunity. He was actually punch for punch with LSU, if you remember that game. Mm-hmm. It was a 7-point game until late in the game. And, so I think he'll take a major jump in his second year starting. There's 5 stars all around him at Florida. Dan Mullen, a quarterback whisperer, you look back at even all the way to Utah, we had Alex Smith, Mississippi State with Dak Prescott. And even here in Gainesville 10 years ago, he led that Chris Leak and Tim Tebow duo. So I think Kyle Trask of Florida could be making a major jump this year.
How the hell did he not start in high school?
Also, how do you get a scholarship not starting in high school? You just threw me off on that.
That's the weirdest thing.
It's one of those quirks that just pops out in the research, and you're like, I got to continue to talk about this. It's unbelievable. So
hey, kid,
I don't even know if it might have been a walk-on. I'm not sure. But
I was going to say, like, the story there has got to be great. Like, hey, what's your name? I'm Kyle Trask. Where'd you play? Well, I was a backup at high school.
Now I'm starting at Florida.
Yeah.
No big deal.
I'm going to lead your program now.
That is why. Well, on that note, I mean, a player that could fly under the radar, we get that every year with teams, too. I mean, LSU was a great example of that winning a title, but I think people thought they'd be good. And you also had, Minnesota kind of coming out of nowhere, flirted with it. Baylor had a really good season. Now they're replacing their head coach, but came out of nowhere and were in the playoff conversation. Now you got Oregon and Florida in the playoffs, so that's already a couple of teams that we knew were going to be good, but not many people expecting to be in the playoff conversation, or in the playoff, I should say. Is there another dark horse out there nationally that you kind of look at and say they won't make the playoff, but they're going to make some noise and have a really good season?
Yeah, one that pops right out is Texas A&M, and before you laugh, because they've always been underachieving their expectations, but I think this year is different. Now, every team always complains about when they lose, oh, our schedule's so tough. But last year, they actually had a case with that. They played number one 3 different times, yeah. 5 top 5 teams. So this year, instead of playing Clemson, they get Colorado. Instead of getting Georgia in the cross division, they get Vandy. So you're starting to flip these losses to wins right away. You get 19 starters back. It's Jimbo Fisher's third year. Kellen Mond's third year as a starting quarterback, dual threat guy. I think they make a major step forward here. I actually have them 10th in the preseason book. And also, scheduling quirk. Now, I don't know if this will still hold true, but at the time of publish, their first 10 games, they would have likely been favored in. Their two toughest were LSU and Alabama in the last 2 weeks. So there was a very legit chance that they would have been 10-0 rolling into late November. And with a definite top five rank next to their name. Now, how they'd fare against Bama and LSU, I don't know, but that would have been a team making noise late in November.
What led you to want to do this, Brad? I'm kind of curious because I've seen your magazine before, and then I'm reading the newest edition this year. It's so detailed. I can't even imagine how long this takes for you to fill out, to do, because you're doing all the Power 5 programs here.
Yeah, thank you for that. No, it's a one-man operation. I launched it in 2012. My predictions were graded more accurate than all the ones on newsstands and nationally. So, but last year, 2019, I wanted to take it a step further and put out a full book, all 66 teams, tons of stats and graphics. I mean, I'm a numbers guy, but I love putting it back into readable terms. Yeah, it's just an absolute passion of mine. And, you know, I think it developed because I see some of these national guys on Twitter and on ESPN, and they stay very, very vague. They only talk about Ohio State and Clemson. And I wanted to dig into all of these programs, and that pops off the page, I think, when you're looking at Oregon State and Wake Forest. And anyway, so I wanted to take a deeper dive. I think I accomplished it, and after last year's edition, I was selected to become a Heisman voter.
It's
been a lot of fun talking nationally. I hunkered down for 5 months from, you know, season's end up until mid-June, and then it's talking season on you know, all the radio podcasts. So I'm loving every second of it, though.
Yeah. Who's your school?
Well, I graduated from Boston College, so it's not much of a threat in the national discussion. It's kind of great because on Twitter, everyone tries to catch you as being biased, but you won't find any, you know, Boston College is harmless. So
well, don't worry. You already got called a duck honk by our listeners, so you're one of the tribe now. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
It's okay. I went to Oregon State, and if I compliment Oregon, I get called a duck honk too, so I don't know what to do about it. Brad Ciencia, picksixpreviews.com, the website you need to visit. Give him a follow on Twitter, although many of you already are at picksixpreviews. Brad, thanks so much, man. We appreciate the extra segment. We appreciate the digital copy, and we loved having you on. We're going to have to get you back on in a couple months. If they can have the season at a regular start time, even if it's conference-only games, we'd love to catch up with you and get your thoughts on how the season's going.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime. Appreciate it.
All right, there we go. Great stuff from Brett Ciencia, picksixpreviews.com, a half hour of just nerding out on college football.
It felt good, man. I'm hoping we get a season because you get segments like that and it just, you get excited talking about playoffs.
I need a cigarette.
Right? What it might look like. I need a nap after that one. And Texas A&M, I'm with him. The scheduling notes that he pointed out, you go back and look, they had to play Clemson in the non-conference, Alabama, LSU, Georgia. I mean, they had an absolutely brutal schedule last year. Auburn, who was a good team, I think finished somewhere in the top 15. So that's a brutal schedule. It flips up for him this year. And the Oregon one, maybe we can get into this a little bit later. If you told me in normal circumstances that you're picking Oregon to go to the playoff, I'm not quite buying it because I think their season sets up this upcoming year or was setting up to be similar to last year. I don't think they can beat Ohio State at home. And then essentially if you lose that game like they did Auburn last year, you're tasked with you got to win out. And that's really tough to do. Teams are going to trip up from time to time, and it happens to even the best of programs. So that was a tough sell for me. But you take that game off the board, which it has now been taken off the board because the Big Ten canceled it and they're not going to play it. Yeah, I'll listen a little bit more now. I don't know if they can go undefeated and run the table in the Pac-12, but can you go maybe in a 9-game season where you're only playing Pac-12 teams, one trip up to USC or Washington or somewhere, maybe a game of Cal that you don't see coming, and maybe one loss is good enough to get you in the playoffs?
I think we could talk about that because that's the element now, right? Like the Pac-12 refuses to officially announce they're doing conference only. Other conferences are kind of punting on that question right now. But the Big Ten doing it, I think, sets the stage for all the other conferences to follow suit. I think there is a conversation to be had. Does it benefit programs? Like, does Oregon benefit greatly from going all Pac-12? Does Washington benefit greatly? What about teams like Oregon State who are looking to try to make that jump into a bowl team? They no longer have Oklahoma State potentially. So what if they get to play like Arizona or something? You get the bottom feeders of that conference. Not that Oregon State's not, but you get the teams who might be even worse than you in place of teams that potentially are better. I think there's a conversation to be had there of how a conference only season will impact these different teams within the Pac-12. We could talk about that. We can also dive into the Pac-12 revenues. Turns out Pac-12, not the worst revenue generating conference, huh? Not all that bad. We'll talk about all of that next. Dirt and Sprague. We continue rolling on Sprague and Line in exactly 1 hour.
We'll get to the Pac-12 revenue coming up here in a little bit. I got a story on an NFL quarterback I want to talk about. What else we got in the show notes? We have a poll of college basketball coaches that I thought was kind of interesting. And we got a Sprague the Line at 2:30.
A what of coaches?
A poll of college basketball coaches.
Like the ranking of best to worst?
No, of how they think the upcoming season will look.
Oh.
And what they want the format to be. I know we haven't even figured out fall sports, but let's move ahead to winter sports because those are supposed to start in October.
Well, those are also indoor sport.
They are.
Sports eye. And I don't know if it's the CDC or the WHO, but one of them just said
the band, the WHO?
Yeah, the WHO.
And they're making medical decisions now?
They're epidemiologists. they've conquered music, now they're moving to medicine.
Let's go.
I think we already knew this, but it was just reaffirmed that more studies are coming out that the spread indoors is substantially worse. So if this isn't under control by the start of basketball season...
Yeah.
You might be looking at no fans for that sport, too.
Yeah, I wanted to stick with college football. I mean, something we were talking about last segment. Just how the landscape shifts if you are to only get conference scheduling. And so we've already had a couple of those games eliminated. Oregon, Ohio State, we know won't be played. Michigan and Washington, we know won't be played. So those games are off the board. I think the Pac-12 is going to make that decision. They're just waiting. The ACC is going to make that decision, and they're just waiting until the end of July. But I fully expect them to get there. I did see this on the SEC, is they have a lot of like cross rivalries with the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Georgia Tech, those kind, in-state kind of rivalry stuff. South Carolina, Clemson is another one that they desperately want to hold on to. The SEC does at least, but the ACC doesn't know if they're going to be able to make it work because they're thinking about going conference only. And then if they do, they also have to fold more games in for Notre Dame to get an entire ACC schedule for Notre Dame. They already have six on the schedule. You might have to add three or four more. So that might be going away. We had a listener that asked, because you brought up Oregon State and maybe how it would affect their season. So let's say you go conference only. They would have Oklahoma State knocked off Colorado State and Portland State. That was their non-conference.
Now, yeah, if you go conference only, then okay, all three are bumped out. I do wonder, do they and other schools like Washington or Wazoo, do they bump your traveling non-conference opponents like Michigan's and Oklahoma State's, but do you keep your regional to support programs like Eastern or Portland State or, the Big Sky type programs?
You could. I think they would want the same standard for every program in the conference.
I do too. Yeah.
So for some teams that don't have a game like that scheduled, a Portland State, for example, or an Eastern Washington that's scheduled, you also have the health implications that we talked about yesterday of different testing and health protocols that follow at smaller schools, maybe not having the resources to test their players the way Pac-12 teams do. So you're opening up an interesting can of worms. I'd be all for it if it helps those programs stay alive. I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah.
But we had a listener that texted in and asked, so is a 4-win team bowl eligible if it's conference, if you play only conference games? It sounds funny to say out loud. Well, we haven't got to this yet, but it was reported today that
I didn't think about that.
The NCAA Football Oversight Committee is recommending a waiver to allow teams to count 2 wins over FCS teams towards bowl eligibility this season.
So you just get an automatic 2 dubs?
That's kind of my reading of it. Yeah, is that you can just kind of count 2 bonus wins. So if you go 4-5 in conference play, if you play 9, or 4-4, if you play 8, nobody knows how long these schedules are going to be.
Wait, read that again?
So they're saying the NCAA Football Oversight Committee is recommending a waiver to allow teams to count 2 wins over FCS teams towards bowl eligibility.
FCS, that's Big Sky teams. That's
yes.
Portland
yeah,
State.
So, like so you, maybe if you end up yeah. playing those games, you can count
so
2 of them towards bowl eligibility.
Yeah, because right now you can only count 1 of them.
Right.
So you would actually have to play those games.
Mm. So like Alabama's of the world, don't they usually play 2? Like 1 at the end and there's 1 in the beginning, right?
No,
like traditionally?
They only play 1. They have the Sun Belt Conference down there, which is where the Troys and the Arkansas States.
Yeah.
And they're actually an FBS school in the Sun Belt. They're a group of 5. And so that's usually the cupcake right before their big rivalry game at the end.
I do think even if the win standard for bowl eligibility, if it does change...
Well, it would have to. I mean, if you're going to play a shortened season, you wouldn't make teams go. If you play 9 games, I don't think you'd have to go 6-3,
sure.
for example, to go to a bowl game.
And despite what people would say jokingly, I think it'd be very comparable to what I asked you about the Blazers, right? If something broke where people got COVID, had to sit out, and the Blazers somehow got to the finals and won, how you'd feel about that because you didn't go to the games, you don't get the parade here. You say, and I think you're right here, you celebrate as if it's just a normal title. I think the same for bowl eligible teams. Like if my Beavers end up hitting that threshold of what they need to be quote unquote bowl eligible, yeah, it's not a traditional 12-game season, but you played it and they did what they were asked to get to that level. So sure, it won't look like 6, 7, 8 wins that you hope for in a traditional sense, but if they hit that clip, I think anything you can do to keep building your programs up along the lines of Oregon State type programs all throughout college football, you're just as happy as if it was a regular season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the number would look like to get to a bowl game and then also what the bowl season would look like. You know, because fans, I don't know if you're going to be traveling around. Those games are in December. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they still have them go on as expected. You change the bowl tie-ins. You change the way those games are played.
Yeah.
But for Oregon State, so Pac-12 obviously schedules 9 conference games. So you're either going to play a 9 or 10 game conference season is my imagination. We've heard the Big Ten's looking at doing 10. So they're adding some conference games on.
Now you make up for the non-conference losses.
Exactly. Yeah. You add up to it a little bit. You want to play as many games as you can. Their South opponents that are on the schedule for the upcoming season look like they are ASU, UCLA, Utah, and Arizona. So those are the 4 teams that they have on the schedule in the South. So USC and what's the other one? Colorado, it looks like, are the 2 that aren't on their schedule this season. So if you were to play a 10-game season, you would add either USC or Colorado to your mix, and then also, of course, playing the North teams.
Well, and, you know, for an OSU, I would think you gladly would take Colorado onto the schedule a little more so than you would USC. But
for Oregon, I think they'd want USC to replace that Ohio State.
USC's already on their schedule.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I was just talking OSU.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? If they had to pick one, but
yeah, they get them at odds this year.
I think they should go 10. I mean, if you're not going to have non-conference, and some of those matchups are huge. I mean, the USC, Bama, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, UW, you lose potentially great matchups. If you're going to go conference only, which feels like a foregone conclusion to me, add 10 games. And I said this before. All these conferences that are delaying, the SEC seems to be the most stubborn because, of course, they have to dictate what college football does, but they're going to have to get on board, like it or not. The Big Ten's going conference only. I think the Pac-12 is relatively soon. Our guy, Brandon Marcello from 24/7 Sports, he says he's hearing that by the end of today, the Pac-12 is probably going to announce very similar to the Big Ten conference only. ACC seems like they're going to be leaning that way. And I assume at that point, the Big 12 and the SEC can just shut up and join the ranks. Go to 10 games. Make up for what you can, losing big non-conference tilts. Go full on 10-game conference seasons. I just like baseball, man. I think by the time we get close to kickoff for a season like that, it's weird. It's clunky. We can't go to the matchups, but we are all in because it could be so different and so unique to any other season.
Yeah, the only conference affected by it, of course, would be the Big 12 because they can't play a 10th game. There's only 10 teams.
But like we mentioned yesterday, you do a round robin tournament going into a conference title game and figure it out that way.
If Oregon is to do that, and a quick glance at their schedule. So their South opponents this year are Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and USC. So the 2 that aren't on the schedule for them, what would it be? Utah. And UCLA. Utah and UCLA are the 2. So you would add one of those 2 programs.
And we know who you'd rather, play.
Yeah, strength of schedule-wise, Utah would be better. And easy win-wise, UCLA would probably be better.
I don't think you worry about strength of schedule. And we can talk about that part of it, too, is that's something else you take into account is when you have 10 conference games, you eliminate playing other conferences. I don't know how you're going to figure out playoff matchups or who your playoff teams are. Yeah. And you also take into account, not only does strength of schedule, I don't know how big or important strength of schedule is. I think you're taking the cupcake over the more challenging opponent, given you already have tough teams on your schedule.
Yeah.
You have USC, and this is from an Oregon perspective, USC, UW. I know Stanford hasn't quite been what they were, but they're still considered a respectable program. I don't think you would want the tougher one of those teams. I don't think strength of schedule is huge a factor. You want the cupcake if you can get them.
So that's the way the schedules could look this upcoming year. But yeah, we're expecting at any point, whether it's today or within the next couple of days, that the Pac-12 is going to make that announcement going conference-only games, especially with some of those marquee non-conference games already canceled, Oregon, Ohio State, and Michigan, and Washington. Let's stick in college football, though, as the financial reports from the last season came out. And guess what, folks? We're not in last place anymore. Let's go, baby.
We're second to last.
We're moving on up. Whee! The financials of the Pac-12. We'll get to that crunch time coming up next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness for Beaverton, Division, Aloha, all back up and running. Great deals going on through July 14th. Go check them out at crunch.com or stop by one of their locations. Guess what, folks? We got some good news. We're not the worst.
A radio show or?
Well, no, I mean, no, there's got to be a show out there in the country that's worse than ours. There's got to be at least one.
Yeah, he's the highest paid employee of Intercom. Mike Francesa opened a radio show yesterday reading his phone, and he read the baseball schedule.
Let me look at that. The Yankees are going to Tampa.
This is, yeah, that's legit then, what it was.
They stink so bad you can't even make
then
it up.
Going to Toronto.
And then he did this.
You get the Red Sox. Looks like Baltimore, Tampa, week five.
We're not. You think we're joking when we say that? He legitimately read off a 60-game Major League Baseball schedule over the year, game by game, by game by game,
to start a radio show. Not only is that problematic as a topic, like who cares, right? Like you can Google that.
I'm gonna go ahead and cross off reading off Mariners schedule at 2:15 of my show notes.
Well, Mariner fan might actually enjoy going down that misery.
Oakland and then Tampa,
but. To make multi-millions of dollars and you think, yeah, this is going to bring people in. I'm going to read the baseball schedule to start my radio show.
All right, we found one worse. That's good. And guess what? The Pac-12 did too, baby! Suck it, ACC. The financials are out for the 2019 fiscal year. And how about this? The Power Five conferences combined had a $2.9 billion in combined revenue for the entire year. Not too shabby.
Yeah, but let's... Anyways,
I know. Don't digress.
Almost $3 billion of revenue. There you go.
Here are the numbers conference by conference. The Big Ten brought in $781 million, which resulted in payouts of about $55.5 million to each of their 14 teams of the conference, or excuse me, 12 of the 14. Maryland, Rutgers, you suck. You got less. I think it's because they're newer members, something like that. But the 12 longstanding members got $55 million. The Big 12, and I'm just going on some payouts here. The Big 12 generated $439 million payouts, ranging in the $38 million range to $42 million range. The SEC, I don't know why this article had them further down. Let me find
the SEC is like one or two.
The
with
SEC
the Big
had
10.
A lot of money. They were right there with the Big Ten. I don't know where. Oh, here it is. $720 million. They gave out $45 million to their institutions. Ole Miss didn't get a full share, apparently, because they were banned from postseason play.
Oh, yeah, from the Hugh Freeze stuff, right?
The Hugh Freeze stuff, I believe, yeah. So $45.3 million to almost all of the SEC members. So it goes Big Ten, then SEC, then, as I mentioned, Big 12 giving out $38 million. Then, ladies and gentlemen, the Pac-12.
Mm.
We're in fourth place, baby. Although they did generate more money than the Big 12 and the ACC, but the payouts weren't quite the same. $530 million for the Pac-12 in 2019. That equaled roughly $32.2 million per school. That also does not take into account the equity value of the Pac-12 network, which we know is an absolute goldmine.
Wow.
That was a joke. So 32.2, not counting the Pac-12 network, which is probably an extra like $4 for every conference school. And then the ACC, man, they suck. They came in last place. Yeah. $455 million payouts, roughly 27.6 to $30 million, something like that. Plus, they gave $6 million to Notre Dame. So the Pac-12 up somewhere in the range of 7% to 9% from the year before. The ACC went down. Look, we crap on the conference all the time, but this is good news.
Yeah, the Pac-12 is the one conference in college football where the national landscape likes to just dump on it, and then people within the conference that cover it love to dump on it. There's not a Feinbaum that just sticks up for it all day, every day. There's not a Joey Galloway who sticks up for it the way that the Big Ten and the SEC have people. The reality is this also, if you look at the future earning potential, the ACC is going to pass us. That's just a fact. They got the ESPN deal now. I think that kicks in either this year or next year. Their revenue streams are going to go up more per school from 27 to 34, depending on who got money allotted to them. That's probably going to jump to the $40 million range. And that's when we're going to get dead last. Mm-hmm. What's killing us is what's killed us all along.
Yeah.
The network.
Yeah, the Pac-12 network.
I respect a lot of people. I have friends who work in the production side of that company, and Mike Yam has been really great to us. We love Yogi Roth. They do an exceptional job. The network itself is the problem, and that's what holds you back. It's nice to be not last in the revenue department and to have the ACC below, but ultimately, I think the network itself is what is going to hold you back and potentially vault the ACC above you. The one thing I wonder on this, the ACC has blue blood programs in it.
They do.
Florida State, Clemson, those are rabid.
Miami, Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I mean, these are rabid fan bases who probably care about their programs even more than our Pac-12 fan bases. And that's not a shot. It's almost just a reality. It's a religion for these people.
Sure.
Why don't they get crapped on more? I don't know if we've talked about that, but I'm kind of dumbfounded.
It's all about Clemson. I've said that a million. It's about winning a champ. It's stupid. It shouldn't be, but it's about one team.
Yeah. For on-field things, I get it. But a lot of the stuff that gets said or written about with the Pac-12 is behind the scenes. It's leadership. It's revenue. It's not making money. It's the network being a dumpster. The ACC is making less. And it's non-existent as a storyline. It's on the field stuff is a different category to me. Clemson, yes, it takes the conference of the ACC up. But if you talk top to bottom, almost every analyst, I think, would say the Pac-12 from top to bottom is more talented. And yet everything that's written or said about the Pac-12 is negative because it's off the field revenue. It's the network. Sure. The ACC gets none of that. And it kind of leads me just scratching my head sometimes.
It's a really great question. I agree with you. It should go hand in hand. It should be separated, like on-field performance and then off-field stuff. The funny part is that people will connect the dots and say, if you're struggling financially, that then equates to poor performance on the national stage, right? And I've always disagreed with that because I think your blue bloods in the conference of Oregon, Washington, USC, those kind of teams, like if you make $32 million or $38 million, that's not going to be a huge determining factor in whether or not Oregon, Washington, or USC can compete at the highest level. That, to me, trickles down further to other programs being able to buy out coaches or afford new facilities. Like the programs further down the list are the ones that aren't going to benefit from that. If USC the last 10 years had been on a run that Clemson was, the Pac-12, even with this deal and being the worst for the most part financially, we wouldn't be getting the same flack. I think it's all about, the leadership is why we can't win. The Pac-12 network doesn't make any money. That's why we can't win. When in reality, it's like, dude, just don't, USC, don't hire Clay Helton. Yeah. Chris Peterson, win the big game.
Yep.
Cristobal, don't choke when you're playing Arizona State. Right.
Right.
These are all self-inflicted wounds that have nothing to do with Larry Scott and the TV deals that he's signed.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem is the how people like connect those two things. Like I have no doubt that over a vast period of time, a decade or more, having the minimal finances compared to what the other conferences right. have, like the Big Ten with Ohio State, the SEC with Bama and Georgia, you want to throw Auburn or LSU, sure. It benefits them and they have an advantage there. But to me, jumping on it right now, I mean, as you mentioned, you're one bad coaching hire away.
Mm-hmm.
You're a couple games from winning Chris Peterson mm-hmm. in Washington.
Yep.
And I wouldn't say choke. I would just say,
sure.
Unfortunate circumstance, a bad play by one DB away from Oregon Maybe. Potentially being in the playoff last year. And then what are we saying about the Pac-12? Because with Clemson, we almost say nothing about the ACC. We yeah. just kind of ignore it and act like it doesn't exist. What's going to determine their future, though, I think the revenue part of this story will start connecting with the programs if this does not change in the next 6 years.
Yeah.
That's when you're going to get distance even more because Miami eventually will figure it out. Vatek has great seasons. Florida State eventually will figure this out. Then you're talking four or five teams potentially in that conference. We know what the Big 12 is. We know what the Big 10 and the SEC are.
Yeah, I got TV deals coming up in the next couple of years are going to be really important for all these conferences. But the Pac-12, at least for 2019, not in last place, ladies and gentlemen. They outpaced in total money. They made more than the Big 12 and the ACC, but in payouts per school, higher than the ACC just by a couple of million dollars. So not in last place this year. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton Division, Aloha, all back up and running. They got great deals going on. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of their locations. It feels great to be back in the gym. Lots to get to in the final hour of the show.
I got a really kind of a douchey Dan Snyder story share.
Oh, okay, we'll throw that into the mix. I like that. We'll spring the line at 2:30, get your fake sponsors in. I got a segment on an NFL quarterback that I want to do with some numbers behind it. There was a poll done on college basketball coaches and how they feel about the upcoming season and some other athletes potentially sitting out the upcoming year. It's going to be a load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.